This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
So I want to welcome you all to this mini-series. We're going to start it off this Sunday, but then we've got Bishop's Visit on the 8th, and then we have Ministry Sunday on the 15th, and we'll loop back around and pick up the next two sessions of this mini-series on spirituality and science. And so I asked Father Santi if he would do something on quantum physics, and he graciously agreed, so I'm looking forward to his presentation. And so then on May 22nd, we'll have the second installment of this series. Dr. Jenna Minix from, Jenna St. David from Seminary of the Southwest is going to be talking to us about the neuroscience of trust. And then on June 5th, Patty Speier will be with us to talk about the mysticism of Otto Scharmer, who is an economist, his theory U. So hope to see you as we move through this series on spirituality and science. So Santi, tell us all about the quantum.
I'll tell you all about the quantum as soon as my slides. There you go. So what I'd like to do today is I am going to be looking at two of the main principles of quantum physics. So in terms of the presentation, if you get nothing about quantum physics, I'm okay with that, as long as you get five really important principles of spirituality. And I'll tell you how I'm going to marry the theory of quantum physics and spirituality and what I hope that you will get out of this. So one of the things that I wanted to do, I have two disclaimers. The first disclaimer is the fact that you might not get a lot about quantum physics. The second disclaimer is originally I was going to give a talk titled The Second Creation. And then my editor, AKA my wife, listened to it and told me that's too theological, too intellectual. There's no spirituality there. Start over. So this is the second draft. And it's titled The Big Small Picture. And really we'll try to look at some principles of quantum physics / quantum mechanics, and I'll make that decision. And then five principles of spirituality, not just Christian spirituality, but spirituality in all of its broadness. So what I'd like to do is first begin by defining the terms. What do I mean by quantum physics? What do I mean by spirituality? And how do they come together? Then speak to some principles in terms of how the physical world applies in principle to the spiritual world. And then I would like to give us some practices for each one of those principles, because spirituality at its root is about the practice of how our worldview affects the way in which we live and then we practice. So let me begin with terms. What do I mean by quantum physics, or what do people who actually know about physics mean about quantum physics? Quantum physics is about the study of micro world. It's about the study of the microcosm. It's the study of matter and energy and the most fundamental. I'm going to see if I can mute everyone here. And so at that level, what we're looking at is how is the world structured? And because of the way in which we look at the smallest level of things, what does that tell us about how reality functions? And then what does that tell us about our worldview in terms of our perceiving of what we are all about? So the most important thing is that in terms of quantum physics, we're looking at four aspects. One, it is about the smallest level of the structure of the world. So we're looking at the subatomic. Go back, if you can, to 7th or 8th grade when you started to see the Rutherford structure of the atom with the nucleus at the center and the electrons and some of the other parts just kind of orbiting around the nucleus. And we were told that that was the smallest way in which we could understand the structure of the world. And then what that tells us about how the world is ordered, how energy occurs, how matter moves, and last but not least, what that tells us in terms of how small and large objects interact. And I'll get back to that in just a moment. Most importantly, quantum physics tries to help us understand not only the properties of the world at its smallest level, but also, most importantly, we're looking at the behavior of the world at the smallest level and how small things behave in comparison to big things. So here we're talking about the subatomic in comparison to a solar system or a galaxy, or in this case, a cluster of galaxies in the universe. And I'll speak to that later on today, but is how things live in connection. An electron, which might be one of the smallest particles we'll ever encounter, with a galaxy. And I'll speak to that in just a moment. And then what do I mean by spirituality? I looked at a number of definitions. I really like Thomas Merton's definition, all about connection with one another and with God. But I really stayed with this definition by Brené Brown, and this one's given to us in Rising Strong. And she says that spirituality is about recognizing and celebrating that we are inextricably connected to each other by a greater power than all of us. And that our connection to the power, or to that power, and to one another is grounded in love and compassion. So first we have this sense that spirituality is a recognition and a celebration. We come to know that we are connected to one another, to God, to ourselves, and to God's creation. And because of that connection, by recognizing our connection to everything, we live and practice differently. So it's this sense that in spirituality, we come to recognize that the celebration or the practice of spirituality brings us a sense of perspective, meaning, and purpose in our lives. What it means to us as Episcopalians, who are liturgical theologians, is that even in our encounter with the liturgy and the Book of Common Prayer, we encounter that spirituality, and it is not just an intellectual experience, but what we encounter in our liturgy, what we encounter in the world, informs our perspective, our outlook, our worldview, and that must have consequences in the way we live, in the way we relate to one another, in the way we relate to creation, and in the way we practice. And those are the spiritual practices that I'm going to try to ground for you or for all of us in just a moment. And so where does quantum physics and spirituality, where do they come together? And so here I am taking a page from a Jesuit scientist and priest, Teilhard de Chardin, who speaks about the relation of all things. So the science of astrophysics the understanding of all things, which is quantum physics, aims to uncover how reality actually works. It is the big picture based on the very small things. So the big, small picture. And then spirituality, and this is where I am going to marry both Merton and Brené Brown. Spirituality is the recognition and the celebration of our connection to ourselves, to one another, to God, and to God's creation. So when you think about spirituality for yourselves, any spiritual practice you may have, it is always not just a ritual. It is not always just a moment to be able to practice an awareness of God, but it is a recognition and a celebration of that connection that then leads us to live in a different way. It changes our manner of living, our style of living, that it has consequences in the world, because otherwise what we are doing is we're just simply going to an intellectual process. And so what I'd like to present today is not just an intellectual theory that has not consequences for ourselves, but because we are embodied, we are a marriage of spirit and body. It has consequences in our relationships, in our lives, in our bodies, in our world. So therefore, quantum spirituality is a vision of life based on our understanding of how reality actually works, and then what that means in terms of how I relate to others, how I talk to my parents or my siblings or my children, how I deal in the world, how I show up at work. And I will speak to some of those things in just a moment. So let me say two small things about spirituality and the spirituality of small things. One is that in 2,000 years of tradition of Christian spirituality, we come to know that when we are faithful to small things, we are faithful to big things. And that on the other hand, our understanding of the larger picture helps us to be present to the small things in life. And so here we have both of these things. Hopefully that spirituality is both a faithfulness to the small things, but also to the big things. And that whatever understanding we may have of how the universe works, of the larger picture, that it may have consequences in the small things, in the way we show up, in the way we drink our coffee in the morning, those moments of mindfulness, in the ways in which we talk to a coworker, in the way in which we drive. I mean, for somebody who practices rage driving all the time, spirituality must have a consequence to the way in which we show up in the world. So let me say then, this is, I'm not sure if this is actually going to play, but let's see. Nah, it's not going to play. It's supposed to be a little video of the transporter machine in Star Trek. It's a little bit disappointing, but you kind of get the message and the image of what it is. One thing that the Star Trek transporter machine in Star Wars, in Star Trek never really got is how it's supposed to work. Is it that in some way the body is being disassembled into small atoms, into the smallest particle, and in some way it is zipped to another place and there it is reassembled? Or is it that in some way, when it is disassembled, it is scanned and a copy of that body, it is then sent to another world and the matter in that environment then reassembles this body? I think that one of the things that Captain Kirk tells us in one of those episodes in Star Trek is that what matters is your understanding of how the smallest particles in reality interact with the rest of the universe. And quantum physics really is about understanding not only what are the smallest particles or the smallest substances in the universe, but how they interact with one another. And then what that tells us about who we are as human beings. So that it is not just necessary or important to know that there's an atom that has a nucleus and that has electrons. But what that tells us about who we are as human beings, what that tells us about how we can relate to one another, what that tells us about what love is all about, what that tells us about who God is, and what is the principle or the ground of our being, which is love and compassion. And so the first principle or the first area in which quantum physics and spirituality come together is mystery. And here I borrow from one of my favorite physicists, Sean Carroll, that he said in his book, The Big Picture, life does not make us any promises that the way the world works is the way we intuit it to be working. So forgive the typo, but we are not giving any promises whatsoever that the way we understand the world is the way the world actually works. And that what matters to us is the fact that when we come to see the theory of the world, we come to recognize that sometimes we don't actually understand. And so what happens to us when we don't actually understand? One of the greatest physicists the world has ever known, American physicist Richard Feynman said, I think I can safely say that nobody understands quantum mechanics. And here, the difference between quantum physics and quantum mechanics is that physics is about our theory and quantum mechanics is about the mathematical principles that ground that theory. And so what he's saying is that nobody really understands how it works. It's just like the way I relate to my phone. I know that if I press a number of buttons here and there, a text message is sent to my wife that tells her, pick me up in half an hour. Now, if you ask me how that actually works, I can't tell you. So what Feynman is saying, and even physicists are saying today, is that we understand that the world works in a very specific way, but if we were to ask them, how does it actually work? Most physicists today do not really know how it happens. So the first principle of quantum physics is we have an inkling of the way in which small things in the world work, how the atom and the smallest parts of that atom, like the nucleus and the electrons, work, but we don't know for sure. And so that leads us to an awareness of two things. One, how do we relate to mysteries and not knowing? And you may be familiar with Aesop's fable of the fox and the grapes. You have, you know, the story of a famished fox that one day sees this beautiful bunch of grapes on a tree and says to himself, I need to have these grapes. They're so great. They look like they will burst into juice the moment I bite into them. I need to have them. And so he tries to get at them. He first jumps, but he is still too far away from the grapes. Then he goes off a small distance and he tries a running leap at the grapes. He still can't get them. He tries one last time. He can't get the grapes. And then he just sits there for a moment and he says, how foolish am I trying to get this ugly bunch of sour grapes that I don't actually even want? And so he walks away scornfully. And, you know, I shouldn't have to explain what the story means, but in some ways, what happens in terms of our understanding of the world is that the grapes are the way in which we're trying to understand quantum physics, and the fox is the physicist. But also it speaks about who we are as human beings, that how we relate to mystery, that if we can't know something, either we feel like it has no purpose, no meaning, and we reject any sort of relationship with that knowledge, or we try to belittle what knowledge is all about. In our own experience as human beings, we know that in mystery, we can either accept mystery. Doesn't mean that there is no way for us to lean with curiosity into how the world works, but that in some way, God is always inviting us to have a sense of humility, that even though we don't understand, we can recapture a sense of awe. And so what physicists tell us today is that even though we don't have a full picture of how things work, the invitation for all of us is awe. How can we recapture a sense of looking at things, and even though we don't understand it, we can lean into them and say, wow, the world is so majestic, so secret, so beautiful, and I want to celebrate that. And so the first mystery where we encounter physics and in terms of spirituality is living into the question. How do you encounter as a human being things that you don't fully understand, like the meaning of suffering? Why do we suffer? How do you understand relationships in your own life that you don't fully grasp or understand? What happens in your own life when you don't have a full image or an awareness of who God truly is? Where do you live in that complexity between fully knowing and having no idea? How can you lean with curiosity into hard conversations? How can you live into the mystery? And so here I'm going to lean again into Thomas Merton, Trappist monk in the 20th century, who said, the best practice we have to celebrate life as mystery is to rediscover our sense of awe. Especially for us who are living almost 60 years after Thomas Merton lived. We have an awareness of almost all things. Science seems to be able to explain all things. And we seem to think that we can explain everything. At least you can Google it. You can go on YouTube and watch a video, and it tells you how the process works. But how do we move beyond a simply scientific or technological mind to recapture a sense of awe for creation? That even though we don't understand it, we receive that mystery as a gift from God. And then how capturing or receiving that gift helps us to live in a way that is humble and open to all the gifts that God wants to share with us. The second principle is the principle of non-duality. There's a rich dude by the name of Bill Gates who once said about 20 years ago, life isn't binary code. What he meant to say is that life is not just one and zeros that then express a message or give us the structure of how the world works. And he spoke this line in terms of how computers work. But that we are not just, life is not just one thing or the other. We're not just living in a dichotomy, but we're always in a spectrum of understanding who we are and what life is all about. And so we have two different ways in physics to understand the world. The first one is the one that we receive. And perhaps if you think of Sir Isaac Newton, what he observed was that he was sitting below an apple tree. The apple fell. And it was a very predictable, simple way of principles that said that because of the function of the world, gravity was able to enforce how all things worked. It was a simple way of saying that all things are predictable, that it's easy for us to know how it works, and that we are separate from the natural world, and we're just simply observants. That though the world of physics do apply to the way our body works, our consciousness makes us observants, and we can be detached in our observation of the world. But quantum mechanics tells us, actually, because all things interact in the same way, we get to see that the world in its smallest components do not actually at all times work in the way we perceive them to work. So we think always of, if we go back to Rutherford's traditional structure of the atom, which you probably learned in seventh grade. I think I did in seventh grade. It is the sense that we have a nucleus that is always stable and is never moving. And then we have a set of electrons and then other parts of the atom that are orbiting around that electron, and that we can always know exactly where they are and exactly how they move. But traditional or classical physics differs from quantum physics because we have learned since 1909 when Rutherford first gave us this traditional structure of the atom, that actually electrons do not orbit the nucleus. Things don't always hold in the same way. And so what we see is that electrons are actually like waves. They're not just orbiting around, but they're moving in a way that is unpredictable. And because of that, the best thing we can see is that in some ways, they're like waves. And they're like waves in a way that they're always entangled with one another. That one electron in one particle is always in contact and entangled and in relationship with electrons with all of creation. And that the basic nature of all reality is relationality, that all things are connected. And so the first principle or the second principle of non-duality is that we're not classical beings having a quantum experience. We are quantum beings having a classical experience, which means that we're not beings that are simply observing the way in which the world is moving and is changing, but we ourselves are change. We ourselves are possibility. We ourselves are always entangled and in movement and in transformation. And we're not just a consciousness that is observing the world, but we're always part of that creation and always being transformed at every given minute. So this line is a composite of the relationship of classical physics and quantum physics, but it's also borrowed from that phrase that says, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. That at the heart of who we are as human beings, we're not just a body that happens to have a spirit and can have spiritual moments, but that our very nature is spiritual. We are spiritually embodied. And because of that, there is no duality between the body and the soul or the spirit, in that all that we are is a celebration of that marriage between the body and the soul, of the spectrum of experiences that we have as human beings between the body and the soul. And so I come back to Merton, who really, inspired by Buddhist monks in the East, was able to tell us the best way for us to recognize and realize that we're not just one thing or the other, but we always are living in a spectrum of possibilities in terms of relationships, in terms of our sexuality, in terms of our intellectual life, in terms of how we relate to creation and to the world. The best way for us to practice an awareness that we are non-dual beings is one, to lean into your experience of embodiment, to celebrate your body, to celebrate the fact that you're not just one aspect of creation, divorced from the rest of God's creation, but we are all part of God's creation, that we're always in relationship with one another. And then nuance. And here I borrow from one of Merton's wise letters, in which he's telling us that one of the most important things that we can do as spiritual beings, having a human experience, is that sometimes the world will present us reality in a way in which it seems very black and white. There are two positions and I have to choose one or the other. But that the world, there's a grayscale, and there are colors, and there are many different ways to lean into nuance and complexity. And most of the answers to the questions and the issues and the problems we have are not found in simply leaning into two choices, but understanding the full spectrum of our experiences to be able to speak to with one, with compassion, and two, with a sense of humility, recognizing that this non-duality means that we have to lean with courage into the complexity and especially into hard conversations. So those first principles are really heavy in terms of quantum physics. The next three are a little bit easier because they're not as heavy in terms of the principles of quantum physics. So before I move on to the next three principles, from Zoom land or from the room right here, any questions before I move on with the next three principles? You're all totally confused right now. It's all good. Let's continue and then we'll have time for questions and answers. The third principle is the principle of awareness. So if you remember, we began with the principle of mystery, that even though we don't fully understand how the structure of the world really works, we are leaning into a desire to know, and not just as individuals, but collectively. We are in collaboration with one another because we all see one part of reality, and in the collective consciousness helps us to get a broader picture of how structure, how the world works. Now, the second part of that sense of leaning into the mystery is the reality of the gift of awareness. And I love this quote by Bishop Barbara Harris, who was a bishop in the Episcopal Church, the first African-American bishop in the Episcopal Church. And she said, we must practice in a way that removes the barrier between practice and non-practice, in a way that allows us to live out of the graces of meditation and prayer, the awe of science, the beauty of creation. And here in awareness, we have this sense that one of the first things that quantum physics or quantum mechanics is inviting us to is to be able to recognize in some ways that the way in which the structure of reality really works, it is in its same way, the way in which all life works. And so here I'm going to lean into another principle of quantum physics, which is the fact that if you go back to the traditional Rutherford atom, you have the nucleus and you have the electrons, which are orbiting around the nucleus. What we have is that at certain times, the electrons, which are the ones that are always giving us the value of energy and the value of how energy is being released or increased or decreased in the atom. Those electrons, when you are observing them in a laboratory, when you're measuring the energy or the values of an atom, when you observe them, they act as particles. You're looking at them, and at the very moment when you're measuring them or you're observing them, it seems as if they're simply atoms, particles, small particles. But when you're not observing them, they act like waves. They move in one direction and then to the next. They're entangling or interacting with electrons from other particles. They're always moving and at work, and we never fully know where they are. At best, there's a probability of where we might find them the next time. It's all about possibility. And so to be able to explain these, enters a physicist named Erwin Schrödinger, who told us that in some way, electrons are both particles, and here particles are depicted as marbles being played with by Jimmy, and waves. So that electrons in some way can both be particles and waves. If that makes no sense, I'm going to explain it in just one moment. And what Schrödinger says is that an electron behaves like a wave when you're not looking at it, and you never see the electron in action. You never actually see it moving. You only see the electron as a particle fixed in space. Enter Merton, who will tell us that all of reality seems to tell us that it's working in a way, because when we look at the way the world works, we're always looking at a very fixed point in history. We're always looking at a very fixed point in a relationship. We're always looking at a very specific experience in our sense of spirituality. We're always looking at a very specific moment in time in our relationship with our siblings or our parents or our kids. But we're never looking at the full picture. And that awareness is not simply having a note about what happened at a very specific moment in time, but it's about comprehending the whole. And so Schrödinger tells us in his equation that the very basis of reality is that we are moving away from duality, that an electron is either a particle or it is a wave, but it is actually acting as both of them. And so the invitation, and this comes directly from Merton in one of his journals, the invitation to move out of our compartments and to live into the integration of the reality that all things are interconnected. The way in which most electrons are working is that they're always entangled. They're always in relationship to other parts of creation. And because of that, who we are as human beings is all about interconnection. And the two practices that come out of our sense of awareness, and this comes from Thich Nhat Hanh, who was a Buddhist monk, is that the two best ways for us to grow into awareness are mindfulness and awakening. Mindfulness and awakening. Now, the second part that comes out of our understanding of how the reality of the world works is that that is also the way in which our spirituality works. And there's an American spiritual writer, sociologist, Ken Wilber, who said that there are four frameworks for understanding human development. Those four frameworks are what he calls cleaning up, growing up, waking up, and showing up. And they relate directly to the way in which we understand the structure of the world. That for most of us, in terms of our spiritual well-being, our spiritual practices, we always begin and mostly stay with the first one, which is cleaning up. That in terms of most spirituality, we seem to think that because we are dual, we are human beings that happen to have a spiritual experience, our body is bad. Most of us as Christians seem to have borrowed from Greek philosophy, and especially from Plato, than we did from Jesus. And we live with this duality in which we think that spirit is always good and the body is bad. And because of that, when we die, the spirit is saved, the body dies, there is nothing else. And so throughout life, we're always thinking that we need help, and that the help we need from the Savior, who is Jesus, is about cleaning up, and mostly in terms of our sense of moral purity. That there's something bad with our body, there's something bad with our sexuality, there's something bad in the way in which we relate to one another. And most of spirituality, most of theology, most of our encounter with God stays in that first level of just cleaning up. But the invitation is to move on. So the next level is growing up. how do you integrate your sense of the relationship of the embodiment that you are? You are both body and spirit. How do you celebrate that? How do you grow in that? How does that lead to emotional intelligence? How does that lead to healthy, integrated relationships with your loved ones? How does that help lead, go into a sense of the goodness and the holiness of sexuality? How does that lead into your own sense of sacramentality? So growing up is about integrating. The third stage that Ken Wilber gives us is a sense of not just growing up, but waking up. And here, waking up is more about looking at the world to see the way the world actually works and letting go of our illusions in a way that helps us to see the world as it is, helps us to accept God's love and grace as God wants to give it to us, so that we can then, and the fourth stage is showing up. Not just that you have an awareness, not just that you're waking up, but that your understanding of reality and of the world and of faith and grace and faith and hope is helping you show up in the world in the way in which you are in direct service with others, in the ways in which you are caring for your loved ones, your siblings, your parents, your spouses, and in the way in which you're showing up to work and showing up to yourself. And so at the heart of this relationship between quantum physics and spirituality, we recognize that sometimes our dualistic thinking helps us to think that things have to be one way or another, and we miss the marriage between the complex, between body and spirit, and then lean into that. And so the invitation is to move beyond just a sense of, I am here every Sunday to clean up, and maybe a little bit of growing up, but that we can truly move into waking up, seeing the world as it is, being truly aware of God's grace for us, so that we can show up to others and share that grace and that love and that sense of freedom with them. The fourth principle comes from Thich Nhat Hanh. And what Thich Nhat Hanh gave us was a new word which he created. And I'll read from one of his books on the power of prayer. This is what Thich Nhat Hanh says. About 30 years ago, I was looking for an English word to describe our deep interconnection with everything else. And so I came up with the English word interbeing. Forgive me, I'm Vietnamese. I don't know English very well, but I just wanted to create a new word. So interbeing it is. The verb to be can be misleading because we cannot be ourselves alone. To be is always to interbe. If we combine the prefix inter with the verb to be, we have a new verb, interbe. To interbe and the action of interbeing reflects reality more accurately. We inter are with one another and with all of life. If there is one thing, if you can take nothing else from this presentation, if all the other 30 minutes that I have just shared with you have been obscure and make no sense, take this with you. At the heart of how the structure of reality works, at the heart of how the smallest of particles and waves and their combination works, is that it's all about relationality. The basic building block of reality is relationality. Everything is entangled, connected in relationship. And at the atomic level, if you destroy that, you have the atomic bomb. Everything we are at the smallest level, at the largest level, who we are, it's all about relationality. And because of that, we are always invited to celebrate and recognize and celebrate, in the definition that we got from Brené Brown, that relationality. And then, because spirituality is a practice, to go out and live it out in the world. To go out and celebrate that we're interconnected with all things, with one another, with God, with all of creation. And also because of that, that sense of interbeing, of interconnectedness, of relationality helps us to make decisions in daily life. So that we don't separate ourselves from one another, but we're always making decisions to choose the other because we're connected, because we're siblings in Christ. And beyond that, because we're interconnected as beings in this universe. Now, the other part of interconnectedness is the sense of, I just read this, the sense that it doesn't just apply to the way in which we understand the smallest things, but also the big things. That as we understand that the smallest structures of the world are always in movement, they're always in connection, so it is with the big things. And I love this, which comes from a book about quantum physics and Buddhism, The Quantum and the Lotus. And this is a quote from Matthew Ricard, which blows my mind. And it's mostly a meditation. This is the meditation that we get from Matthew Ricard. Imagine yourselves, you're sitting in your room, you're reading this book, and you think, I'm still, I'm not moving anyway whatsoever. And yet, consider this. Our Earth is taking part in a fantastic cosmic dance. So here you are, you're not moving, or you think that you're not moving. But he says, remember that everything within you, the smaller particles within you, are in movement right now. And then first, the Earth is pulling you or pulling us through space at a speed of nearly 20 miles per second during its annual journey around the sun. You think you're still right now, but actually right now, the Earth is moving you along with it at a speed of 20 miles per second. That's plenty fast. Then the sun drags the Earth with it during its voyage through the Milky Way at a speed of 140 miles per second. You're taken by the Earth around. At the same time, the sun is taking all of the solar system with it around the Milky Way. But that's not enough. The Milky Way is falling in turn at approximately 55 miles per second towards Andromeda. And there's more to come. The local group that contains our galaxy and Andromeda is falling at about 375 miles per second toward the Virgo cluster of galaxies, which is one of the largest cluster of galaxies, which in turn is moving towards a large complex of galaxies called the Great Attractor. All of creation, from the way in which we look at the smallest particles, the atom, its nucleus, its electrons, are always in movement, always interacting. And then the rest of creation is also interacting. We are on Earth, moving around its axis, moving with the sun around the galaxy. That galaxy is moving along around the Milky Way. The Milky Way is falling, and then the cluster of galaxies is also falling. We're always in moving, and that movement is going towards what we call, or astrophysicists called, the Great Attractor. All of creation at any given time is always a movement of both givenness and attraction. We're always in interbeing, we're always in interconnection, and we're always moving towards the one point of greater attraction in the universe. And so this fourth principle of interbeing comes together in recognizing that, which I said at the very beginning of this principle, that the basic building block of all reality is relationality. All that we are is about recognizing that we are interconnected with one another. And the best way to practice that, and this is the mystery that once again comes from Thomas Merton, the two best ways for us to celebrate that we're always in connection with one another are gratitude and connection. Giving thanks for the fact that every single one of us is formed with atoms, which have a nucleus, which have electrons, and that every single one of those electrons are entangled and in a relationship with one another. Celebrating everything that we see around us, celebrating the people around us, gratitude grounds our interbeing, and then connection. Not just that I am grateful, but that sense of gratitude moves me to want to be connected with others in the decisions that I make, in the way that I show up in service, in my relationship with my spouse and my siblings and my parents, in the way that I show up with my coworkers. So it's not just enough for 5 minutes one day to say, I'm really grateful with God for all the gifts that I received. But because of that gratitude, I move into greater connection with others, in service, in humility, in greater love. And then I allow that to be the very way in which I help others to do likewise. Last but not least, we have the principle of love. And here in this principle of love, we have two parts. The first part comes, and this, again, I quote from Teilhard de Chardin, who was a Jesuit priest and scientist, who said, love is the physical structure of the universe. And he didn't mean it just in a very like cutesy emotional way, but what he meant was, going back to this quote by Matthew Ricard, that at its core, in its structure, the entire universe is all about attraction and givenness. The world is always moving towards something, and the world is always in relationship. And because of that, and that is the very definition of love, attraction and givenness, the very structure of everything that is love. Now, what we can see that is that not only do we understand that in a scientific way, but also as Christians, that has a greater meaning to us. Love is the attraction of all things toward all things, forgive the typo. It is the givenness of all things. You know, there's that hymn that we sing a few times a year. They will know we are Christians by our love. And so that they will know that we are Christians by our very sense of understanding and becoming aware that the very structure of the universe, it is always moving towards God, who is always calling us to be in relationship with one another, to interbe. This once again comes, this is kind of paraphrasing Thomas Merton, who says, gravity, atomic bonding, orbits, cycles, photosynthesis, ecosystems, electromagnetic fields, sexuality, human friendship, animal instinct, and evolution all reveal, they're all manifesting at all times, an energy that is attracting all things and beings to one another. The entire structure of the universe, it's always a manifestation that we are moving, not just interconnected, but we are being attracted to all things and to all beings at all times. We are in a movement toward ever greater complexity and diversity. And yet, ironically, also toward unification at ever deeper levels. So we're always moving towards one another. Interbeing, interconnection is the very essence of the universe, which means that the very essence of who we are is to be in connection with one another. Because of that, we are called to celebrate complexity and diversity. We leave behind non-duality. And then last but not least, and this is what love does, it celebrates difference, and yet it brings us together. That diversity and unity are two of the greatest principles of the universe, because love is the very structure of the world as we come to know it. And then what does that mean for us as Christians? And here you can either go back to the prologue of John, where he tells us that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And here we see that Word, that Logos, as the very wisdom or structure of the universe, the Christ who is always present. Or we can hear from St. Paul, who in the first chapter of Colossians says, Christ is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation, for in him all things in heaven and on earth were created, things visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or powers, all things have been created through him and for him. And so the theology that then flows into a spirituality for St. Paul is the fact that, number one, Christ, the Logos, the Word of God, the wisdom of God, it is the very blueprint of creation, that nothing is devoid of the presence of Christ. And because of that, the Christ is present in all reality, that the divine DNA is present in all things at its very core, a blade of grass, a flower, a friend. All things at all times contain the divine DNA of Christ. This is what Richard Rohr just wrote about in his book, The Universal Christ. That Christ is always present, the very blueprint, the divine DNA, and present in all things. And because of that, when we recognize that, spirituality is not just an awareness of that, but that it has consequences in our showing up. Again, that movement from cleaning up to growing up, waking up and showing up. How is our awareness that the structure of all things is love and that that structure is Christ? How will that have consequences in your life in an hour from now? And the last two practices that come with spirituality, again, because spirituality is not just a cutesy emotion or an intellectual exercise, but it is hopefully a practice, the way in which you are showing up in the world. This comes from St. Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, that says, the two best practices for you to give yourself to love is one, contemplation. And this here comes more from the sense of what we receive in Lectio Divina, contemplatio, the sense of being in the presence of God and celebrating that love is at the heart of all things and letting God love you. It is a contemplation to attain the love of God. Not that God may love you, because God already does. There's nothing you can do for God to love you more or for God to love you less, but to simply let God love you, to be bathed in that love, in that sense of how God embraces you at all times. And then, in that awareness of that love, to go out into the world and to celebrate givenness, to give yourself, which is at the heart of what we celebrate in the Eucharist, givenness. And so as we close, and then we'll allow a little bit of time for Q&A, it is the sense that our understanding of the world, the very structure of how the world really works, is not just a vision, but it has consequences in our lives. And that hopefully that in the next few days, as you're like, what the heck did he say? And you're so confused by not just the introduction to quantum physics, but the principles and how they apply to spirituality, that if anything else, you can remember that we're constantly being led into the celebration of the mystery of life, to be able to leave behind non-dual thinking, to celebrate at all times interbeing or interconnectedness with one another, to wake up, to leave our delusions or illusions behind, and to lean into love and into curiosity, into a way of life that is always celebrating our humanity, our embodiment of that humanity. Thank you. All right, so I went a little bit over. So we have about 5 minutes for questions and answer. And I know your questions are going to be incredible because my answers are going to be lacking. So who wants to go first? No pressure. Who? Okay.
My comment is that many of my friends who don't leave, it's like,
do you mind coming to the microphone so the people on the Zoom line can? She's coming. She's coming, folks. Hey, right here. Oh, they won't see you.
Okay. Many of my friends who don't believe do believe in particle physics and quantum mechanics because these scientists say that this is so. And our ministers say that this other thing is also so, or whatever. And it's sort of like everybody's taken everything on faith because I don't think there's like 10 physicists in this room.
Maybe there are.
Maybe there are. There may be. But we take a lot of everything on faith, including quantum mechanics. And I do love Brian Greene. So,
Brian Greene, did you say?
Brian Greene, yeah.
Yes, me too.
I think that I'm going to go back to something that Dalai Lama said in terms of how science and faith interact. And the reality is that we're not always in what he calls a spectrum between faith as not knowing and science as full certainty. But in both faith and science, we're always in a relationship of what we have come to know and what we do not yet know. That certainty is actually the opposite of faith. Faith is a deep trust in God, even though we not fully understand all things. And then in science, there are things we know. And as Richard Feynman said, things we do not know. And how, with humility, do we accept that mystery? How do we lean into the unknown with one another so that together we may be able to start to name more things? But we're not in the spectrum between not knowing by faith and science, which is full knowledge. But we're always in a celebration of what we know with humility, leaning with curiosity into a greater sense of knowing, which we call mystery. Maybe time for one more question. Anyone from Zoom land? I think there's a question here.
It's a great lecture, yes.
I hope you're all, yes. Yeah, so the question was about the four frameworks for human spiritual development. They come from Ken Wilber, and he spoke about those four. And his whole thesis is that 70%, or at least 70% of most of us, when it comes to our spirituality, we all stay only with the cleaning up. That we think that spirituality and coming to church on any given day, especially on Sunday, is simply about helping us deal with that sense of our sense of moral purity, that we have to be pure vessels to be able to truly have an encounter with God, and that there is more. So that invitation to move on to growing up, waking up, and showing up. Yes, Diane.
I love the concept of showing up and juxtaposing that to the discussion you had about connections and the need for connection. And I do think, as you just said, that we forget that step. Mm-hmm. How important that is to address our inner needs of being connected.
Yeah. So the sense of how that is related. So those frameworks are related to connection. And I think the two points, and not to go back to Merton too often, but the one thing that I love that Merton is constantly doing, especially in the last 2 years of his life before he died, is that he recognized that spirituality doesn't simply give us a hint that we are connected to one another, but constantly asks us to actively celebrate that connection by reaching out to others, by celebrating relationships, by rituals, by pilgrimages. So it's not enough to simply have an awareness that we're all connected, but making decisions that help us to celebrate and to strengthen those bonds of connections that we have, which is hopefully something we'll be able to do this month when our pilgrims from Malawi come. So with that, I leave you. Thank you.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.